Hello and welcome to another episode of Cranky Talk, a show for av geeks and non-av geeks alike when we actually publish it. We tackle anything related to airlines and sometimes beyond. Dave, it has been a while. It has. But we're back again to try and help understand all of these new federal rules that are supposed to protect consumers.
DOT recently announced some new rules, but it might be a bit unclear what the benefits actually are.
I would agree on that. The press releases they put out really just try to simplify what's happening in the new rules themselves. So you got to actually delve in here. And there are two rules, not just one. So we need to go into more detail. So maybe we should actually do that today.
Should we put on our government regulation hats? We've been...
Ooh. Are those like tinfoil hats?
It depends on who's listening. We've been gone for so long, folks are going to be thrilled that this is what we came back for.
I mean, who doesn't want to talk about government regulation? This is amazing. All right. There is a lot of good, actually, in here. This is kind of interesting. There is some weird as well, though, which is why it's worth talking about. So we should do that. But first, we do want to thank our sponsor, MedJet. And we will talk more about MedJet a little bit later.
All right. So which one should we start with? The one on the refunds or the one on disclosures?
Well, personally, I'm partial to the refunds one since that one has been published in the Federal Register, has a hard date going into effect on June 25. So let's start there. And everyone, we will put links to all these things in the show notes so you can review. Just know that this one, I think, was like almost 300 pages, and the other one is, I think, 180 pages or something like that. So, if you really want to read through the full rules and comments and responses, I would recommend maybe reserving a little bit of your weekend to do that, or like the whole weekend.
Nope, they just want you to summarize.
Okay, well, the main thrust of this rule is to make it easier for consumers to get refunds when an airline cancels or significantly delays a flight. Airlines will now have to automate those refunds or travel agents after a waiting period, which will make life easier for customers. But as usual, the devil is in the details.
So what counts as a flight being significantly delayed?
Well, that is indeed one of the details, Dave. So there are actually six different ways that a refund could be triggered. So let's just back up a little more here. Those are: one, a flight that you booked is canceled at any time after ticketing by the airline. Two, a domestic flight that was booked is changed by more than 3 hours, either departure or arrival time. Three, an international flight that was booked, and it does have to touch the U.S. You can't be flying from like Beijing to Bangkok or something. But an international flight that was booked is changed by more than 6 hours, departure or arrival time. Fourth, if an extra stop is added to your ticketed itinerary, then you can get a refund, even if it doesn't add 3 or 6 hours to the time change there. If you are downgraded from one class to another, one cabin to another, then that is another reason. And the last one, I'm not going to get too much into, but a traveler with disabilities, if they're forced to change connecting airports or if they're put on an aircraft without like the expected accommodation for their disability, then that's a reason they can refund as well.
Oh, okay, so they actually did define significant.
Yeah, weird, right?
Very weird. I thought that this would be some vague rule leaving it up to the airlines as usual.
No. They actually finally defined it, which is good. And there's actually a little bit more in here, too. There's some rules about requiring airlines to issue credit valid for 5 years to anyone who can't travel due to a, quote, serious communicable disease, so, you know, COVID kind of thing. But that's all, you know, minor stuff.
I feel like the airlines already do most of this, though, don't they?
Somewhat. Depends on the airline. So we have two different things going on here. If the change happens at least a few days before departure, then it falls under airline schedule change rules. But if it happens close to departure, like, you know, weather delay, maintenance, whatever, that kind of thing, then it falls under an irregular operations rule. And they have different policies. Each airline has its own policies. And, you know, it can vary depending on if it's schedule change or irregular operations. But most airlines actually already cover this.
Okay, you say most, but who doesn't?
Well, American, for one. American won't allow you to get a refund unless the change is more than 4 hours. So it's going to have to change that, at least for domestic travel, to bring it down to 3 hours. And the other big airlines are usually 2 hours or less. They aren't impacted. But remember, this also applies to foreign airlines, and those tend to be the worst offenders. When you think about during the pandemic, we had Air Canada and TAP Air Portugal as just some airlines that really played games with this. So, you know, this will have an outsized impact on those. And it's definitely a win for people who book these guys that, you know, play fast and loose with people's money.
Yeah, so this all sounds great. What's the catch? We would not be talking about this if there was not a catch.
Well, you, sir, know me too well. You're right. There is some weird stuff in here. So, for example, the one that stood out to me the most, after careful consideration, DOT decided to define a flight cancellation as anything where the expected flight number won't operate. So if you booked flight 187 and they change the flight number, that is a cancellation. And airlines do this all the time. They change flight numbers like all the time. So even if there's no time change, but a flight number change, then that means people can get refunds, which is very weird. But on the other hand, this probably means airlines will stop doing as many obnoxious flight number changes. So that's good.
Why would they do this? This seems dumb to require refunds if just the flight number changes.
Yeah, well, so the way DOT explains it, it says that it would be too confusing if it tries to really pick this apart with more detailed definitions. So it's just going broad. If you booked a flight, if that flight number and flight does not exist anymore or doesn't go between your two cities or any of that, then that's a cancellation. Too bad. And some of the justification is saying that, well, this keeps it simple. And besides, if it's just a flight number change, nobody would want a refund anyway, so it's not going to be a big deal. But that's not true at all. Like, people absolutely will wait for schedule changes on a trip they don't want to take anymore, hoping they can score a refund. So if you want to take a trip, no, a flight number change is not going to cause you to request a refund. But if you don't want to take a trip and you're just waiting for something, just the flight number change will be enough now, and they'll be able to get a refund.
Okay, good for them. I still think that's kind of weird, but
it is.
You mentioned automatic refunds. How does that work?
Oh, yeah. This is where it gets really thorny, in my opinion. So the way this works is that once something happens that triggers the possibility of a refund, any of those six things we talked about, then the client, the traveler, has to be notified. And at that point, they can opt in and say, yes, I want a refund, or they could accept alternate transportation options, or if the airline offered a credit and they want to take a credit, you know, whatever it is, they can choose to do that instead of getting a refund. But if there's no other alternative available, no flights available, something like that, or if the traveler rejects the alternate option, then that would trigger the automatic refund. And where I get anxious in this whole thing is that this also applies if a traveler doesn't respond during a set time. There would be a refund if the traveler doesn't reply by the deadline that gets set, and it would just automatically process, even though they haven't confirmed that they actually want a refund.
So what's that? What's the time?
Well, apparently airlines and travel agencies can set their own time frames as long as it's, quote, reasonable, which goes back to how DOT always ran this crap before, which drives me nuts. You know, this is fine when you're talking about irregular operations because, you know, like you're trying to take a flight. It's today. It's tomorrow. The flight's canceled. Here's an option. Do you want it or not? No. Okay. Automatic refund. That's fine. But where it starts to turn into a nightmare is with these advanced schedule changes that are further out from actual travel.
Why?
All right. Think about it this way. At Cranky Concierge, we get schedule changes from airlines and we notify clients and provide options to them. You probably don't see this on your side, Dave, but do you know how many times clients don't bother to respond?
I'm sure all the time.
All the time. Emails get lost. People get busy. Sometimes they just ignore it, and whatever it is, it happens. And I can absolutely see a situation where somebody doesn't respond in the set time, but because of the law, the refund has to be triggered. And then the traveler freaks out when they find out they don't actually have a reservation anymore and they actually wanted to fly. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out for these people who don't pay close attention. I would think it would be much better, especially for schedule changes, to require some sort of positive confirmation here.
Yeah, I can see that being a problem, but I guess that's on the customer. They just have to learn or lose out.
Yeah, but you know who they'll blame, right?
Oh, yeah.
The airline or the travel agent. It's never their fault. So
yeah.
I assume there probably will end up being some ugliness here if this ends up actually going as I think it will. But hey, regardless, they'll have their money back. And apparently, as part of this rule, it'll have to be quick. If they paid with a credit card, looking at within 7 business days or 20 business days if paid another way. So pretty quick refunds, which is very different than what I believe was Air Canada's standard of never during the pandemic, or other airlines that said, give us a few months.
Love Air Canada. So is there anything else in this rule?
Sure is. They have some rules on refunding ancillary services too. So the first one is if a checked bag is delayed more than 12 hours on a domestic flight, 15 hours on an international flight of less than 12 hours in length, or 30 hours on an international flight of more than 12 hours in length, then the bag fees have to be refunded.
That sounds good.
Agreed. Should be even less time if you ask me. I find it obnoxious. You pay for baggage handling, and I know the airlines will say, well, you got your bag. That's what you paid for. But no, that's not really what I paid for. So that's annoying. So this will fix that. And also, it requires automatic refunds for services not provided, like your Wi-Fi is broken. Like, you should not have to go and submit that. You should just get refunded. You pay for it, you get refunded. Amazing how that works, right? If it doesn't actually exist. A few more minor things in here, like who has to do the refund and stuff like that. If you're curious, it's the merchant of record, which is usually the airline. Even when travel agents book it, it's usually the airline, but sometimes it is the travel agency. But that's who has to handle it. And that's about it.
Okay, so other than a few quirks, this seems largely good to me. Let's talk about the disclosure rule after the break. Hey, Brett.
Yes, Dave?
Is it just me, or is there an increasing number of places in the world that seem unsettled?
Oh, it's not just you, Dave. Everyone seems a bit nervous these days.
Yeah, that makes travel a little nerve-wracking.
And that's why MedJet Horizon is MedJet's fastest-growing membership. It provides 24/7 global security response for things like violent crime, riots, kidnapping, and all the things that would keep you up at night while traveling.
Yep, that's why we're fans of MedJet.
Also, they get you moved home if you land in a hospital somewhere.
To learn more or sign up, go to medjet.com/crankyflyer. That's medjet.com/crankyflyer.
It's definitely worth looking into.
All right, so let's get on to this other rule about disclosures.
This one is prickly? It's a, I don't know. Thorny. I like prickly. Didn't I already use thorny earlier here? Listen, the point is, I'm not quite sure what to make of it yet. The rule hasn't been published in the Federal Register, or not when we recorded it at least. So I'm not exactly sure when it goes into effect completely, but there are some deadlines on dates in here, which I'll talk about later. But in general, a whole lot of disclosure rules are coming down the pike. So get ready.
I think we've said disclosure now at least 100 times, but I am no closer to knowing what's happening.
But that's because I haven't disclosed the information to you, Dave.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right, well, here's what's happening. Basically, this is DOT trying to improve the disclosure of what it considers to be, quote, critical ancillary services, end quote. Do you know which ancillary services are critical, Dave?
I imagine you're about to tell me.
Anyway, no, there are currently five of these that DOT has defined, although they leave it open to say we can add more if we want. But these are, let's see, first is bringing a carry-on bag and not just a little personal item. I mean, a real carry-on bag. Second is checking a first bag. Third is checking a second bag. Really should align these numbers up better. Fourth is canceling a reservation. And fifth is changing a reservation. If there are fees involved, they need to be disclosed.
Are they not already? I feel like they are already.
Well, they are disclosed on fee pages, like static pages that just kind of lump together everything. But now DOT wants them more front and center in the booking process. So this information has to be provided at the first point in any online search where an itinerary and price are shown. Then the full policies have to be disclosed before ticket purchase, meaning like the weights and dimensions of the bags and all that. That has to be before the purchase, but not on that first screen. And they can't even link off to these fees. It can't be on a fee page anymore.
This sounds like it's going to make the already confusing fair search pages even more confusing.
Quite possibly. You think they? You don't think they need more information on these pages, Dave? I don't know. I thought it was just too much white space. Now, the one thing I will say is that even though they do have to be on the page, they can be in a pop-up or like a tooltip or expanded text box or something like that. So they can take some clutter away. It's just, it's a lot of info to shoehorn in here.
So let me guess, this isn't everything, is it?
Of course not. This also requires airlines or agencies to display the fees that apply to the specific passenger if the passenger provides identifying information, like a frequent flyer number. So if you have elite status on Spirit, Dave, which we know is your dream, and you do a search logged in or you enter your number or something, then the system is supposed to respond with the bag fee information saying, no, you get a free bag because you have status. And of course, I already know that, or you already know that because you earn the status and you know what your benefits are. But it does make it more challenging. It's dynamic. So, you know, it's not necessarily bad. It just probably makes programming a bit more tricky.
I can't imagine these websites being ready to show this that quickly.
No. No, your imagination is not lying to you. This will take time. The plan does have a timeline on it for different bits and pieces here. So what it says is that the airlines have to provide agents with all the right data no later than 6 months after this rule goes into effect, or October 30th. Then the airlines themselves have to comply with this rule on their websites no later than 12 months after it's published, or April 30th, 2025. And then big travel agencies have 18 months to implement, or until October 30th, 2025. And small agencies, which in case you're wondering, and I know you are, it falls under the Small Business Administration's definition of, quote, small entity, have 24 months or until April 30, 2026, when I think we can all agree the world will have ended anyway, and so it doesn't matter.
Well, that escalated quickly.
Do you watch the news, Dave? Okay. Oh, one more thing. They can cut the disclosure if the traveler says affirmatively that they won't be checking a bag or carrying one on. So, yay.
So that's one more button that I have to click.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love wasting time clicking buttons that are dumb.
I don't feel like that's true.
Nope.
No. But you can always book offline, Dave. Their phone numbers. I assume emails. It doesn't actually specify, but, Telegraph, Carrier Pigeon. In those cases, agencies and airlines only need to say that critical ancillary fees apply, if they do in fact apply. And then they only have to disclose the details if the person asks for the details.
I mean, I like talking to people even less than I like clicking dumb buttons.
I'm well aware.
All right. Is there anything else?
Just one other thing of note, and I'm a fan of this one. There's an additional rule here saying that airlines can no longer advertise percent off sales unless the percentage comes off the entire airfare, including mandatory surcharges. It doesn't have to include government taxes. They can't discount those. But, you know, what would happen in the past is you would see an airline that would, say, have a $25 fare, and then they have all these different surcharges that get added on. You don't know the difference as a customer. I mean, you can look it up, but it still has to be displayed as part of the fare. But when they say 25% off, they're only taking it off that small amount, and it's a bait and switch, and DOT said no more of that.
Yeah, that's a good one. There's a lot between both of these rules, but I have to say, none of this sounds bad to me.
No. I think that in these rulemakings, there's actually a lot to like for customers. There are some issues. That auto refund thing makes me very anxious. If a customer doesn't respond to a notification, I can see our future. But, you know, in general, I think these are fairly smart requirements and are far better than some of the original ideas they had proposed, which you can feel free to read about in those 500 pages that we will link in the show notes again, because you have nothing better to do for your weekend.
Thank you to our sponsor, MedJet. Remember, visit medjet.com/crankyflyer for more details.
If you'd like to be a sponsor of Cranky Talk, let us know. We might actually do it more often.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. Email us at advertise@crankyflyer.com. And please remember to leave us a 5-star rating. This helps others find our podcast.
If you have suggestions for what you'd like us to cover in a future show, tell us. If this isn't hard, you can email us at info@crankyconcierge.com.